being able to reflect back and learn and go, okay, that was really bad, but the positive thing to come out of that, like the positive thing of me now being in a wheelchair, I can now relate to a lot of other people, to a different audience.
Hi, I'm Brooke Melhouse. Welcome to Disabled and Proud, the podcast that does exactly what it says on the tin. Each week, the show highlights an awesome disabled guest speaking about their own disability, why they're proud to be disabled, and why they're proud to be themselves.
So, Nick, welcome to Disabled and Proud. How are you today?
I'm all right, thank you very much. And thank you for the opportunity to waffle on a little bit more about my story.
Do you know what? I love a good story. So this is the perfect time and the perfect place to have this conversation.
Yeah, well, it's better now than 24 hours ago when I was hassling you because I thought it was on, but I was actually a day early.
Look, we love being a day early. I've already told you I was a day early for a meeting today. It's something in the water. It is what it is. But genuinely, I'm so looking forward to this conversation because I feel like there's a lot to be said and a lot of things to delve into. And I'm so looking forward to having this like time and space with you.
Oh, God, no pressure then.
Yeah, please. No pressure whatsoever. Just take it chill. Super easy. So the first question that I ask absolutely every single guest is, how do you refer to your disability?
Do you know what? When I was looking at the sheet, I think this is one where one of the questions I actually struggled with. And I think it's because of where I'm at with my journey.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know me, I've got 7 prolapsed discs in my spine, 3 at my neck are the worst, and then 4 at my lumbar. So I'm ambulatory. I use a wheelchair, but I can still get up and walk around, but can only sit upright, stand or walk for very short periods of time and distances. Mm-hmm. And effectively, it's degenerative disease disorder of the spine, something like that, which is obviously why I keep forgetting what it's called. And so I just call it spinal injury. But then when I went to SIA, Spinal Injuries Association, they don't class it as serious enough to get support from them. So I was starting to go down the words of I've got a spinal injury. And then the way that they class whatever classification of obviously that you need your boundaries, your borders, don't you?
Or
when you fall into a category. And I didn't fall in within their categories. So that then really confused me as well. And I've been struggling with complex PTS, post-traumatic stress, for almost a decade now. And it wasn't until I looked into disabilities more that I realized that mental illness is actually classed as a disability, where I thought previously disability is physical.
Yeah.
So I guess my real disabled journey started from a couple of years ago, and I was in my wheelchair in 2021. That's when I started to use it a lot more. So I think I'm still maybe that stage being newly disabled and still trying to understand whereabouts specifically I sit within it. And it really threw me when the SIA didn't kind of classify my specific injury as bad enough them, and that really threw me. So I say to people that I've got a spinal injury. I then have fibromyalgia, so chronic pain throughout my body and serve at certain points across neck and shoulders, which combined with the nerve damage that I have from my neck prolapse disc that rub against and pinch my spine. So I'm in chronic pain every day, every minute of every day. And then there's the mental illness. So if people like say, what do you class your disability? And I'm like, okay, have you got 10 minutes? Let's sit down and let's ream off the list and see how many boxes I can get ticked off for you.
So
that, I'll be honest, is one that I still struggle with.
I think that's so important to say, because like you said, you don't fit under these categories, and that's a really difficult thing in disability, right? Because we think that we can categorize disability, we think we can almost put it in a box and wrap it up and label it, and that's it. And everybody who falls under that category is going to be the exact same. And actually, that couldn't be further from the truth, because as we've literally just proven whilst listening to you speak, is that disability is incredibly individual, and how one person presents with their disability is going to be very different to how somebody else presents with their disability. So this whole idea that we can actually create boundaries and boxes and categories within disability is actually really futile, because only one person at one point in time is going to fit into them. And almost as soon as it's published on paper or wherever, it's actually out of date. So that idea itself is completely redundant.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was doing things within mental health, so being a mental health trainer involved in men's mental health for 6-7 years now. Mm-hmm. And my three top things were always having a purpose, knowing your meaning, and knowing your identity. And knowing my identity is one I really struggle with, both as an army veteran who served 15 years in the army and left, forced to leave because of my spinal injury, and then trying to, you know, in the army, you have an identity. You know, I still know my army number, 25094369. That has been my identity for over 14, 15 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a sergeant. So there's my identity. Everything is wrapped in that. And when you come out of that, go into society, you're just a mister. Mm-hmm. So identity was really difficult anyway. And then as my health declined and everything got progressively worse and worse and worse, and it was when I moved to Toaster, where I live now, and my ex-fiance had enough of me, and I was a git. I was an absolute arsehole to live with. I was really struggling to manage the pain. Thought I knew it all because I've been training mental health for 5 years and told everyone, yeah, I'm living it, I'm doing it. I wasn't. I was struggling with all of it, and I was a horrible person, to be honest. And I'd also become very codependent on my fiance, so she did everything. I was laid up 85% of the day, and she did the cooking, the cleaning, she did the caring, she did everything. So when we split up, I then had to find a new flat, and it was the first place I could find that I could afford. And then it was suddenly, oh my God, what do I do now? How do I cope? How do I clean? How do I do all this stuff by myself? And that happened 2 months before COVID and the first lockdown.
What a wonderful time.
So purpose, meaning, and identity has been a battle ever since March 2020 of really knowing where I'm at. And my health, obviously, that's where it all declined. Started being reliant on a chair 75% of the time. Got the chair in October 21. And trying to get social care support, trying to get any kind of support. Got my fibromyalgia diagnosis in 2020. Got the diagnosis, no support, no referral to anywhere to help me understand it, anything like that. So, yeah, and whilst I've done a lot of work on my purpose and meaning and understanding, self-knowledge, all these kind of things which I've learned is amazing, and I've learned about myself. Identity, knowing I know who I am, but I still struggle with where I fit in society, and also I think within the disability community. I struggle a lot with imposter syndrome, and I don't know. So I'm not, I don't want people, you know, some people, my followers and that, my God, oh, you're so inspirational, you're amazing, and bless them, I love them for it. But please don't watch my videos and think I'm totally sorted out and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot behind the scenes where I'm still battling, you know, fighting my battles and trying to work stuff. So that hasn't answered your very first question at all in any way, shape or form. So we're doing well.
But actually, I think it kind of has, because I think there's a lot to be said in actually being, I don't want to say brave enough, because I don't think it's bravery, but there's something in that being vulnerable enough to be like, actually, sometimes I don't know how I refer to my disability. I don't know how I identify in this community. Like, I'm a part of it, but I don't necessarily know where I sit. And I think there's a lot of power in that, because I think...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this is the brave, inspirational, courageous thing has happened. That was happening in mental illness for years, and you start to see it now with amongst people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And it's nice people telling me I'm brave. I don't think it's that I'm brave. I would say it takes courage to own your own shit. It takes courage, regardless of gender, mm-hmm. as to be so vulnerable and put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. You don't have to. I'm very aware of that as well. When I'm saying to people, you should own your truth, and you know, if you want to speak out, do. You don't have to do any of that. You don't have to tell everyone and open up and tell everyone. That shouldn't be part of your journey if you don't want it to, and you don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it does. It does take courage for sure. And I think people need to know as well that it's all right that you don't have it all sorted out.
Yeah, I think that's a really big one, isn't it? You don't actually have to. Almost, you don't have to know your place to be somewhere. And that's a really big thing to say, because I think quite a lot of people in society, not just the disabled community, get really hung up on where they are and who they are and what they're doing does it make sense to them, or does it make sense for the outer world to look at them, to place them in a place. But actually, there's, like you said, it's courageous to be like, actually, this is my life, this is the shit that I deal with. Who knows where we're going to be tomorrow, but it's a fucking ride and here we are.
Exactly. And I don't know how you feel about LinkedIn. It's like, in a way, I love LinkedIn because the profile, the platform that it is. But I struggled with it over the past, couple of years while I've been managing suicidal ideation. Mm-hmm. And I found myself comparing to everyone else on LinkedIn, because let's face it, a lot of LinkedIn is shouting about what you've done, which nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah.
But then what I did was I was reading everyone's posts and they're going, oh, we did this and we got this award and I got this, blah, blah, blah. And all success stories, which is brilliant and amazing to see, regardless who you are and where you're at. Mm-hmm. But I found it a struggle, because then what I ended up doing was focusing so much on everyone else's posts, because I was trying to build my community and my connections and mm-hmm. all this sort of stuff. I got sidetracked into trying to fulfill the algorithm's requirements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I then wasn't achieving anything myself, because I was spending so much time, to be honest, even resenting some people because of their successes. And I'm going, well, why can't I have that? Why can't I be achievable? Why can't I be mm-hmm. successful? And you know, on your phone, you can get those reports that tells you how long you've been on your phone for in that week. Right. One day, I don't know how I managed it, 7 hours was spent on LinkedIn.
Wow. That's a lot of time of a day.
Yeah. And that was a massive eye-opener for me. Mm-hmm. And I was spending so much time comparing that I literally wasn't living my life and focusing on doing me and doing my thing.
It's that really cringe cliche, isn't it, that comparison is the thief of joy, which, like, don't get me wrong, I love a good quote, but that is one that always sticks with me, because I think actually it hits the nail on the head. If you're consistently looking at what others are doing, you're going to miss out A, on yourself, but also what you could be achieving. And there's a lot, again, to be said in that, because we live in a society where everything is instant and we can look at something immediately and we can compare our successes to other people within a matter of seconds, like milliseconds. All you need to do is look at somebody else's profile and see how many followers they've got or how many likes they've got on a picture or a comment or what they've shared. And that it's so removed, because someone can have like the most incredible online success and then have a really horrendous personal life. Or something that I've really noticed is that you can portray as one person online and then you meet the person and they are wildly different from who they are online. And like the two don't always match up. And I think in the back of my head, that's what I always think. I'm like, that's great that you've got massive success on LinkedIn and great that you've got loads of followers on Instagram, but are you a good person? And I don't know that until I meet you in person. And to be quite honest, like I take everything on face value. I'm very much like, if I meet you in person and we get on, amazing, I'm so happy. But I'm not going to base my judgments of you on your online profile, because I don't actually know you, because that could be a lie.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm exactly the same. You know, And it was a big eye-opener for me when one of my videos went viral just before Christmas. And it was 2 million odd views. I don't know if you call that viral, but to me it was. So I don't care what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy with that. But what was really eye-opening for me was I was like, oh my God, you know, I was before that only getting 300 to 500. This was on TikTok, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly in the space of a couple of months, I had that one, which was of me going up a travelator in Tesco's on my power chair. Mm-hmm. And then getting told off for going up a travelator in Tesco's. And another couple of me going up steep ramps and something else. And I hit something like 4 or 5 million with about 4 videos over about 2 or 3 months. And I didn't feel any happier for it.
I can tell you why.
Oh, go on.
So this is my favorite ever piece of knowledge. And I regurgitate this on the regular. And I love this piece of knowledge. So when something good happens, the chemical reaction releases, like that's how you get dopamine. The same reaction happens no matter what you choose your win is. So for example, if you win £1, the same chemical reaction happens if you win £1 million. You do not get 1 million more times dopamine because you won a bigger prize. And so that idea that actually the chemical reaction is consistently the same, it doesn't increase no matter how big your win is or like what you perceive as a win, is like such invaluable pieces of information, because you can then literally choose what is a win in your life. It's like, for me, my greatest win in the morning is my first sip of tea. It's my favorite thing in the entire world, and I get so excited for it. And people think that that's really trivial, and I'm like, no, it's the best thing in the world, because when something perceived, like societally perceived as amazing, comes along, I will have the same amount of happiness as the first sip of tea in the morning. And I got to choose that. How amazing is that?
Exactly. I mean, I feel like that about my cup of coffee. I got to admit that the only time I have coffee is in the morning, and there's a big difference when I don't. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got those views. It has led to my first paid work as a influencer, mm-hmm. content creator, but I get more from a single message from somebody saying thank you, or you've helped me with X, or I mean, I take a screenshot of all the messages that I get,
mm-hmm.
The positive ones, obviously. not the death threats. I don't you know,
they're like not the ones those. We keep.
No, strange that, isn't it? And yeah, I have a little wellness folder that I mm-hmm. keep all my screenshots in, so when I'm like feeling really crappy or low or something's gone wrong, I go in there and I'll read the comments. And that I gain so much more
mm-hmm.
from that thank you than what I did. All that came with millions of views was loads of comments that did my head in, loads of notifications that were so infuriating, and people having arguments on the posts about which flipping Tesco's and where it was in the country. I kid you not, people were arguing amongst themselves. It was hilarious. And it just became very overwhelming, and I didn't see it as a win in the end. And I never thought that. I was always, that was my measure. It's your measure of success, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I thought, that kind of world, that's my measure of success. But I didn't really get much out of it. It was an interesting learning experience.
Yeah. So I want to dial it back a bit to acquiring a disability. Because as you said, you're a military man before. You had to leave the military due to medical reasons. And I was wondering, what was your knowledge of disability like pre-becoming disabled? And how has that changed, like that transition period? What was that experience like from almost like, you're essentially like crossing the border, aren't you? You're going from one thing into another. But what was that experience of almost relearning how the world now works around you? What was that like for you?
Yeah, my mum's disabled. Mm-hmm. She had her kneecaps taken out when she was like 20. So I'm not a complete stranger to it.
Yeah.
But saying that, when I really started coming across, it was when I got into my wheelchair, really, mm-hmm. and then accessibility, you know, or lack thereof. Yeah. And that's when it really, literally smacked me in the face. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I remember the struggles my mum had. And, you know, that was 3 decades ago. And whilst obviously things have improved in certain areas to certain points, I was totally gobsmacked at how inaccessible a lot of places still were. I think that was mm-hmm. the biggest thing that struck me.
Yeah.
I've then also been really struck about certain individuals in society and their lack of knowledge, understanding about disability, and especially the haters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ableist people out there. And, you know, when I started getting trolls, mm-hmm. death threats,
mm-hmm.
A lot of horrific, spiteful stuff that I wouldn't even repeat on here.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst I got that a little bit with mental illness and PTSD and being a survivor of attempted suicide, I thought it would be more accepted because it's physical disability that's been around a lot longer, you know, mm-hmm. in people talking about it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I was horrified, mm-hmm. to be honest. I have found I was ignorant, mm-hmm. to be honest. And then connections turned into friends like Isaac Harvey, Kat Paylor-Bent, Victoria from Unhidden, mm-hmm. a range of people with a range of different disabilities who really helped me to learn.
Yeah.
But it's like I say to people when I didn't know what a radar key was, right?
Yeah.
There's no hand manual. There's no one website that gives you heads up on all bits and pieces. So in case your audience don't know, the radar key is the long key that unlocks a lot of the disabled doors, toilet doors. I actually thought radar key, I thought it was a smart bit of tech, like a hotel room, that you kind of tap the lock and it would open. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then you get the biggest key,
like the longest key in the world.
It's like, you know, thinking that you're unlocking the doors to Buckingham Palace or something. But all those things, it was very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. To come into it newly disabled.
Yeah.
I think when it's not on your radar, mm-hmm. if you're not impacted by it personally, you only know what you know. Mm-hmm. But I've been very proactive about learning about all kinds of disabilities now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's really important to reiterate the point that there is no like guidebook, because I think people think at some point you get told where to go and what's going to help you, and it just doesn't exist. There's not a handbook. You don't get a website. You don't get a printed manual that's like, oh, so like you have spina bifida, you might want to check out subsection C under like heading A. This will really help you. That doesn't exist. And to be fair, even if it did, again, it would be out of date by the time that it was printed or like updated on a website, because things are changing all the time. But actually, there's a lot of self-education and almost self-discovery as well, because you have to relearn how to navigate the world in a way that's different from what you had before. And particularly surrounding like your career, how has becoming or like acquiring your disability impacted that career?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's one that I'm very passionate. I did a talk at a local school last week about this.
Mm-hmm.
From 2 points, when I was in the army and then coming out and going to society, I came out the army as a weapon and tactics instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, there's not much need of that in Civvy Street. so it was like, how do I earn a living here? What do I do?
Yeah.
So that adapting. And then again, when I ended up in the using the chair more and really struggling with the pain, I'm like, how the hell am I supposed to earn money?
Mm-hmm.
How am I supposed to work? I think there was like three key things. I'm just trying to think of my talk to the kids, which were amazing. I was well chuffed. putting it together, and now I've totally forgotten all of them. But it's the ability to be able to adapt to your situation, I think is key. And I managed to, acceptance is big, to really accept your situation. I speak a lot more about ability over disability, but almost from a non-disabled viewpoint. And I mean that as in to say, we've all got things, we're better at some things than others, regardless if that's maths and English or disability, being disabled or non-disabled, or we've got strengths and weaknesses. It's we can all do some things better than other things. And so it's relearning what you're good at, relearning what you're not so good at, and then playing to your strengths, really, playing to the things that you are good at. I'm a good speaker. I manage to speak well. I'm very open. I can share my journey. And so I started earning money as a speaker, and I made a decision to put myself out there and to fully open up, not fully understanding the impact and what that would mean. I was a little bit naive when I was doing that. I didn't expect to be getting death threats and all this level. I was totally didn't expect that. So I played to that. And the other one, I was trying to play around with different things. So it was, I was also looking for enjoyment. That's what I'm trying to get to. So it's, you accept it, you relearn what things you are good at. And I looked at what things I enjoyed. And before, I was doing a lot of work in suicide prevention. And in my heart, I really want to do that, especially suicide amongst people with disabilities, because it's horrific. But I noticed my mental health declined massively whenever I was involved in that area. Whereas creating videos, going out and going on my adventures and doing stuff with accessibility, I love doing that. I love going out and causing a bit of trouble and being a bit of a mischievous person. I love it. I love editing. And then I started getting followers and I started to get views. So then I started researching, how do I earn money? Can I earn money from this? And I had the belief that it can be done. And that's why, beginning as this year, when I picked up 3 paid contracts to actually do this, that has now given me more belief and the strength and the confidence I can make this work now, you know? And so I think that would be the key thing of re-looking at what you're good at and play to your strengths. Try and find something that you enjoy doing, because then it doesn't seem to be like work. And the last thing would be resilient. No, that was one after resilient. So I said this was to a bunch of year sevens, all right? So about 11 years old. I was expecting them to be 15 years old. So I was suddenly struck by a bunch of 200 odd 11-year-old kids. And I'm thinking, okay, the words I've got written down here are going to go over the heads. And actually what I had down on it was, when everything goes tits up, keep going. I was like, I can't say tits up to a bunch of 11-year-olds. That would not go down very well. And so it was, life always throws curveballs and things go wrong. Like COVID, no one knew that was coming. So when things go wrong, just keep going. Just keep turning up and go to work every day. You've got to keep going. Got to keep going. And I think I pulled it off in the end, because I ended up with about 50 followers on TikTok and everyone leaving little comments going, that guy was at my reception today. He was awesome. Sick. So I think I pulled it off.
Sounds like you did. And I like what you said about sometimes you just got to go through it, because I think that's a big life lesson for everyone, isn't it? Is it like, sometimes you can't go over it. Sometimes you can't go under it. You've just got to go through it. And it's not necessarily the most comfortable thing to do, but sometimes it's the only option. And it's not a fluffy message. It's not like a nice message, but it probably is one of those ones that's more the most important lesson, is that sometimes you do just have to go through like rubbish times to get to the other side. And then upon reflection, you can look back at what went well and what didn't necessarily go so well.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's two key things. One of the biggest one happened last year. And like I say, I've really struggled with thoughts of suicide brought on because of my disability, not because of depression or mental ill health, where a lot of people make that assumption, but it has nothing to do with mental illness. It was about loneliness, isolation, and the level of pain that you're living with every day. And last year, there's a video all over the place for it, but I took part in a suicide prevention initiative called Baton of Hope. Toured 12 cities in 12 days around the UK. They came to Milton Keynes and I was chosen as a baton bearer. And so it did a route around Milton Keynes, and they stopped at Red Bull Racing in Milton Keynes at their headquarters. And I was chosen to hand the baton over to one of their drivers in their Red Bull F1 racing car. So I handed it over, turned out to be Daniel Ricciardo as a person I handed it over to. And then we were supposed to follow behind the race car as it drove through the technology campus. And my head straight away, my cheeky little mind was going, oh, I could, I'll just ride alongside it. Because I that was my one thing. I wanted a video. My videographer was with me, of me riding alongside a F1 car. I thought that would be amazing. And the crowd, so I was pulling out a little bit and just behind its rear wheel. And the crowd started cheering, go on, go for it, go for it. And so I ended up kind of basically, I overtook an F1 racing car driven by Daniel Ricciardo, and it made it onto BBC News. And that was the first day when I finished filming where I said, actually, today I'm glad to be alive. And that is the first time I've said it and meant it for over a year. And that came from nowhere. At no point did was that a goal of mine to be in a wheelchair and overtake an F1 car. Never. But because I kept turning up, because I kept showing up even when I really didn't want to, and I literally didn't care about life anymore, I still kept up, I still kept going, and this thing happened, which is what drives me forward now, you know, pardon the pun. And so you really don't know what is around the corner. Literally anything could happen. And so whilst we have breath in our lungs, we have the option to keep going.
It's like that image, isn't it, of the two people in the mines, and one person is so close to hitting the gold, but they walk away, and that the other person still carries on going, and like the idea is they eventually they get to it because they carried on going. And I think that that's a really important thing to say. And actually talking about suicide is never easy, like regardless of whether you have suicidal ideation, you've been touched by suicide in some kind of way, it's not an easy topic to talk about. So I really want to thank you for talking about it, because I personally believe it's a topic that really needs to be spoken about a lot more, particularly amongst men. Because, and actually I've never said this on my podcast, by the age of 21, I had known six boys to die from suicide. And 21's really, really young. But none of them were disabled, or to my knowledge. Actually, no, I think I know factually that none of them were disabled. But actually, it's something that does really need to be spoken about. And it's not, again, this comes back around that it's not a nice conversation. It's not a comfortable conversation. It can be really awkward. It can make you feel really icky. But actually, another one of those things, it's uncomfortable, but you have to sit in that uncomfortability and grow through that uncomfortableness. It's like growing pains are called growing pains for a reason, right? Because it can be painful. But I really like what you said, that actually like the best day that you had came out of nowhere. It wasn't a goal you had. It wasn't something that you had a target for. It literally came out of nowhere. And that was the best thing that could have happened. Because it's that reminder that actually, yes, it's wonderful to have goals and it's amazing to have targets. But don't forget about all the other little bits in between that will bring you so much happiness that you kind of forget about it.
Absolutely. It is the unknowns. And yeah, I think everything that I've been through, I just think I've lost a number of military brothers, and I ran a men's mental health group for 3 years. And one of the guys and good friend took his life 18 months ago. Mm-hmm. And whilst we can easily complain about there not being support and there's not this or there's not that, and we know things aren't great, we know more needs to be done, but there's also a lot we can do as individuals, mm-hmm. you know. And I keep saying to people that my life must have been saved half a dozen times over the past 2 years by complete strangers smiling and saying hello. Mm-hmm. I kid you not. You know, there's times where I'm with the thoughts and I'm torn and I'm struggling because I don't want to be here. But yet I know I can do a lot of good. And I look at the messages, people thanking me, and that you become really torn. Mm-hmm. And then you look up and someone just smiles genuinely and say, hi, you okay? I've seen you on social media. Thanks ever so much for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Or you seem a bit down today. Are you okay? It interrupts that thought process. Mm-hmm. And even without going into full conversation, someone cares. Mm-hmm. And that has literally, like I say, saved my life a few times. And just real authenticity and kindness,
yeah,
can help so much. And I feel we've lost that, mm-hmm. a bit. I feel we've lost our way a little bit. A bit like I've taken us completely away from the loving questions. That's my way of doing a tangent back on topic, by the way.
Do you know what? Subtle. That was quite a good segue. I'm not going to lie. Like, we're coming back. And it's, but actually ties in really nicely to the question that I was going to next ask, and that is, do you have a piece of advice for a younger version of yourself?
Yeah, it would be, I guess, three. First one is really understand who you are. Mm-hmm. When you go through that process of, even at a low level, of knowing when I feel like this, I behave in this way, or it makes me feel like this. What makes me feel better? What makes me feel happier? What do I enjoy? You know, mm-hmm. to understand who you are, what makes you happy, what makes you sad, and what can be done about it. You know, knowing those things. I spent 14 years in the army being not me, mm-hmm. trying to be the soldier that people expect soldiers to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I wasn't Nick Wilson. I wasn't me. I was trying to be a squaddy, going out on the piss and beating up civvies, because that's what I thought you had to do as a soldier. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to drink four days a week. And when you drink, you got to get hammered. There's things that you're expected to do as a soldier. So mm-hmm. 14 years not being me.
That's a long time.
And yeah, it is. And even before that, I was, you know, on the streets at the age of 16. So even then, I wasn't really being myself. And I knew nothing about emotions. I wish someone had taught me about emotions and how to better manage them, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's the biggest thing that's helped me since I've done this self-discovery or became more knowledgeable about me. Mm-hmm. Being able to manage my emotions and to identify why I'm feeling the way that I am and what I can do to manage that. That is at the heart of everything that I do now. Mm-hmm. Everything that helps me to manage, to process bad information, to get me through dark times or a difficult life-changing situation or whatever it might be, knowing how to manage my emotions and understanding why I'm feeling this way or why I'm behaving this way is so important. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Knowing that and having that and knowing about emotions, 100%. And the other one, weirdly enough, is about time. So when I was going through the journey, well, for over a decade or so now, you kind of, well, I expected things to happen quite quickly, mm-hmm. you know, where on average, you know, for depression, mild to moderate depression, the average is about 60 sessions. And that's usually one a week. Mm-hmm. So that's over a year.
Yeah.
I never thought it would take as long as it has, you know, even forgetting that 2 year period of COVID or whatever. I was totally naive of how long time wise things would take.
Yeah.
So I think they're probably the two key things I think that I would say, and just things are going to go wrong, and when they do, you just got to keep turning up.
Mm-hmm. I love what you said about managing emotions and how actually learning how to deal with your own emotions and who you are has meant that you're able to navigate yourself better. Because I think there's so much to be said in being able to understand why you do what you do. Like, for me, I find that fascinating. I find people's behaviors, mannerisms, why they do what they do, like, so interesting. Like, I get really quite into it. But there's something to be said for being able to have like the self-reflection inwards and being able to pull it apart for yourself. Because sometimes it can be quite scary because you can uncover a part of yourself that you didn't necessarily knew existed. And I was wondering, through your journey, has there been any point in time where you thought, oh, this is touching the surface a bit too much. I don't like it. This is not a fun experience for me.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's been a couple of times. And whilst one of them was a military experience, I don't want people mm-hmm. to focus on, oh, it was a military thing, so therefore it doesn't relate to me.
Yeah.
It was a traumatic thing. And within trauma, it doesn't really matter about what happened. It's the fact that it's the trauma, regardless. Yeah. And I uncovered a situation that I'd completely forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mind had done this protective thing and completely yeah. locked it away. And going through this self-discovery and some of the work that I've done with Op Courage, which is a mental health support team for veterans mm-hmm. specifically and their families. And yeah, we uncovered this thing and it was horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And it has stayed with me since.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have night tremors from it, which makes it sound really bad and scary. But I'm glad that it did happen. Because actually what it unlocked was a certain behavior that is caused specifically because of this traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I now know how to manage that. I now know why I'm overly sensitive and have abandonment issues are connected to this thing.
Yeah.
So it helps to explain my mannerisms or a certain behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas before I was so frustrated and upset because I'm acting like a person that I'm not, and I really didn't like, I hated that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really upset by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a sensitive guy and I hate upsetting people. And I was upsetting people and I wasn't a nice person. And I really got upset by that and I didn't know why that was happening.
Yeah.
So when we untapped into this, we managed to connect the dots. So when you know something and you know why, you can then start knowing how to manage it.
Yeah.
And you can then even at times prevent yourself, stop yourself from going into behaving that way.
Yeah.
So yes, potentially, yeah, you could come up against some bad stuff. You know, you might uncover some stuff, especially from when you're younger,
mm-hmm.
When our minds do protect us and it locks memories away. But I personally would rather know why I'm acting and feeling a certain way, because when you know about it, you then work out how to manage it.
Yeah. This actually ties so nicely into, oh God, this is actually this ties so good into this. I'm going to congratulate myself for this because I think this is seamless. Ties in really nicely with the idea that I have that going through any form of hardship, whatever it may be, if you can look back and notice something positive about the experience, and I'm not saying like, oh, it was great on that day I wore this color. I mean like a positive trait within yourself, then you've learned something from that. And I'm just like, I'm a big learner. I love to think that there's learning in every aspect of life. And has there been a particular positive trait that you've noticed that you have when you've looked back over difficult times?
So many. I'm like you. I'm a massive learner now, and I will try and learn from everything. And actually, I'm talking at an event, depending when this goes out, called Let's Talk Better,
mm-hmm.
which is run by Zeenat Nirani, and they're having the 1 year anniversary this year, and it's amazing. And theirs is all about positivity, more from, like you said, positive experiences from upsetting times or traumatic times, and, mm-hmm. And things like that. And could I pick one? Bear with me. Mine's slowly turning over. I know it looks like I've frozen, but I'm actually thinking. I think the biggest thing that I am proud of myself is how I've learned to be a better person.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've had to go through the really dark times to learn more about me,
mm-hmm.
and to adapt.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I hadn't spent 14 years in the army, if I didn't have that military mindset and that resilience which was drilled into me from the army, if I didn't have the traumatic experiences of the operational deployments I've had in, mm-hmm. you know, Northern Ireland, Kosovo, Iraq and Afghan, etc. Those are the things which have kept me alive. And even like with all the pain, being able to reflect back and learn and go, okay, that was really bad, but the positive thing to come out of that, like the positive thing of me now being in a wheelchair, I can now relate to a lot of other people, to a different audience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just speaking to one type of people now. I can speak to other people in wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can draw from different experiences. I can speak to a group of guys and I can say, I know what it can be like going through that. I know how difficult it'd be. I can speak to survivors of suicide who rarely get spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say, hand on heart, I can relate to the pain you're going through of surviving something like that and yet still not wanting to be here or really struggling to deal with the fact that you tried it,
mm-hmm.
and that people think that you survived. So suddenly, hurrah, you survived. And it's a good news story when so many of people don't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I can relate to them and they can relate to me now. So whilst I can look back and went, if I didn't attempt suicide, I wouldn't have that over me. If I didn't go in the army, I wouldn't have experienced the horrors of war or humanity at its very horrifically worst. But also because of that, I've seen humanity at its very, very best.
Yeah.
I've seen the beauty of kindness, of gratitude, of belief, of community support, of true love from a stranger to a stranger. I never thought that could even be possible. Through everything that I've learned and learning about myself, I appreciate life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful for my physical and mental injuries and illnesses because it empowers me to be able to speak to others.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst I can never walk in someone's shoes, I can relate to their journey, I can empathize with them, and I can really hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's precious, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot to be said in being able to hold space for other people from a place of experience and not just saying something for the sake of it. And I think that that's a really invaluable skill to have. And particularly when we're talking about things that are really quite raw, because let's be honest, these topics are raw and they immediately, you're vulnerable and it can be uncomfortable. And they're not, like we've said, they're not always the nicest, easiest conversations to have. But being able to hold space for someone going through that from a place of experience is invaluable. And actually, I really want to thank you for being so open and honest on this podcast, because I think you've been incredibly raw, which I really appreciate, because it's not always easy to talk about these things. But having these conversations means that somebody else feels less alone. And that's really quite important, particularly when we're surrounding this with disability, particularly when we're looking at this through a disabled lens, because so often disabled people do feel alone, or they do feel like they don't necessarily have someone to reach out to. They don't feel like they have that connection, that support, that, you know, that something isn't there for them. And I really want to thank you for being as I've said, open, raw and honest about that, because somebody else out there will now feel less alone because they've heard you say it. And that is a really incredible thing to be able to give someone, even if you haven't met them like personally. It's amazing to give someone that space.
Yeah, exactly. And look, you know, I'm incredibly humbled, honoured. I can't find a word for when, you know, I get a message.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, just listening to your story or you just saying this truth helps.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I, like I said, I've still got my demons. I've still got work to do, you know. I'll still finish this call and have a cry later. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll still struggle with certain bits and I'll still make mistakes and I'll still upset some people here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But it is so important, beyond important, to have these conversations now. You know, I haven't managed to do a video yet for this, and I haven't shared this with anyone yet. And every time I try to record a video, I just burst into tears and I can't. But my New Year's Eve was spent on the phone to a survivor of suicide,
mm-hmm.
who was really struggling. They weren't in what people think would be crisis. You know, you don't have to be in crisis to have thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
They're very calm, very relaxed. And they said to me something which no one has said before, and I think I will always struggle with this, and I haven't worked out the best thing to say to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, if I took my life, so many people would be upset and so many people would question why,
mm-hmm.
and so many people it would speak about it and all this kind of stuff. If I don't, no one speaks to me. So if I want to make my point, I might as well just take my life. I feel more ashamed each day of being a survivor because no one cares about us. And at least if I take my life, it will raise the issue, it will raise the awareness, and maybe it will make more of a difference. They seriously thought they could make more of a difference through taking their life than living.
That's a lot.
And that, the thing is, I struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
And don't leave this in if you don't want to. But it was, you know, there is an element there. And, you know, over three times more people with disabilities die by suicide than non-disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Three times more. That never gets spoken about.
Yeah.
And obviously I came out with all the usual stuff. In response to this person, they are still alive, by the way, so you know they are better than what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a different perspective now. They believe they can make more of a difference, which is all down to them and the work they've put in.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just so many people out there right now are feeling alone, unheard and unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how much that saddens me. So if we, having these difficult, raw conversations, can make one person feel more seen,
mm-hmm.
represented, then we've got to have them.
Yeah, you know? Exactly that point. I think that is a really valuable thing to take away, is that actually we have to have them, and we don't grow, and I don't mean like personally, but I mean society doesn't grow, doesn't progress if we don't have the difficult conversations. And I really want to thank you for sharing that, because it's not easy to talk about, and that story itself is not an easy story to retell. But thank you for sharing that with me and sharing it here, because someone else is going to feel less alone because they heard that. And well, like that, I say, is amazing.
It is, but like I said, don't feel like you have to leave it in. Listen to it back, see what you think. You've got to do what's right for your listeners and stuff. Absolutely no pressure from me to keep it in, all right? Just want you to know that. Don't feel pressured to keep mm-hmm. it in.
I only have one final question for you. I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And that is, Nick, are you disabled and proud?
Yes, I bloody am.
Thank you so, so much for coming on today. I really love this conversation because I think there's a lot to be said about growth, and we've really like spoken a lot about that today. And we, but we've also spoken about the difference in like navigating a new world with disability and everything else that comes along with it. And I know I've already said it, but I want to say it again. I really appreciate you being really raw and honest and all being vulnerable as well, because there's so much to be said in that. And I really appreciate that. And I just really want to thank you for giving up your time today on the podcast, because I've genuinely loved it.
You are very more than welcome. And again, seriously, thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disabled and Proud. If you've enjoyed the show, then please give it some love by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you download your podcasts. It really helps us to reach more and more people each week. Plus, if you've got a particular highlight, then I'd absolutely love to hear it. Tag me on your Insta stories @DisabledandProudPodcast.